In Exodus 23:1-9, you have some pretty specific admonitions and rules and commands. We already talked about the first one in 23:1, where you're not supposed to bear a false report. That's basically a lie. And it's also some sort of connived or contrived story in order to cover up something or insist that it was somebody else who did whatever is in question. You're not supposed to join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. So this is what we see going on in the country of the United States of America today, and it is absolutely heinous and diabolical and satanic. And people are doing it. It used to be you could trust people to tell the truth. Now you have to watch them and listen to them and make sure that their words are somewhere near the truth, in keeping with the truth, or if it's just an out-and-out lie. I watched a seminar sometime back as to how you can know, based on physical characteristics and or wording, to determine whether or not someone's telling the truth. It was I think it was an FBI or a CIA, one of those two, and they ought to know lying and cheating and malicious witnessing pretty well. They deal with it all the time, and then they also are good at it as well. You have to be. If you're going to be in that business, you can't tell people everything, so you find ways of deceiving and lying. And, you know, they rationalize it in their minds and in their daily beliefs. They obviously can sleep at night. Some of them can't, but most of them can. And that's an absolutely awful thing. I don't know, you know, if it was all gone tomorrow, if all that deception was gone tomorrow, all the psyops, all the selective truthfulness, I put that in quotes, all that stuff, the clandestine speaking one thing but meaning another, if that was gone, would it be a better society? You bet it would. You could actually trust somebody. Anyhow, this is one person lying and another swearing to it. As I read it, don't join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. Then there's more. You shall not follow the masses in doing evil. These are all things that God not only dislikes, but calls sin. It's just plainly sinful. You shall not follow the masses in doing evil. In my mind, from where I came from and where I grew up, this is a vigilante scenario. But it's also a crowd mentality. And it is what we saw during the COVID epidemic, which was questionable at best. But going along with the masses and doing something that's evil, Black Lives Matter come to mind. People who join in with the crowd because they're either whipped up or thinking they can get lost in the crowd and not be seen. I don't know. This is huge. People are like cattle, and they don't mind doing something en masse that they wouldn't do individually. And I suppose you could find example after example after example of this. Just for a crazy example, this is going to Dr. Frankenstein's castle to storm the doors there and make sure we get rid of the monster. And people can easily be convinced to go along with a crowd. This is the storming of the jailhouse to lynch the man that we are sure, even though we have no proof, is guilty. Vigilante type things. I don't know, I think I'm talking in circles at this point, but you don't want to get involved with a crowd that's on its way to do something evil or wrong before God, because God doesn't need cameras, you know. He doesn't need witnesses. He doesn't need hearings. He doesn't need any of the surveillance and detective methodology that we have in order to show someone wrong. He knows immediately, even before the fact, what's going on. You're not either, as it goes on, to testify in a dispute so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice. This is a false witness again. This is going along with one party in order to defraud another party. It is one person lying and the other one swearing to it. Perverting justice is what we're talking about, bottom line. There are experts in court trials today who are paid to give a favorable account or testimony or so-called expert testimony in order to sway the jury or sway the verdict or the judge. Truthfulness. This is all the opposite of truthfulness. God desires from his people truthfulness. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. These are things right here in the first two verses that were used to crucify Jesus Christ. That was about as unlawful a kangaroo court as ever has been in existence. And yet these are the things that went on. In Pilate's hearing in the courtyard out there in front of him, where he said, "I find nothing wrong with this man. There's no reason to have him crucified." Different words, of course, but the same ideas. And the Sanhedrin, the Pharisees, Sadducees, scribes, and others who would support that evil horde, were whipping up the crowd, and they got the crowd to call out for Barabbas as opposed to Jesus. Barabbas was indeed guilty. He was more than guilty. He deserved, if anyone, the punishment of death. But we all do, just as an aside. But Jesus did not. Jesus never sinned and never did wrong and never lied and never did any of these things in order to win people over to his side or to get people to do what he wanted them to do. He gave people the opportunity to do things based on the truth, giving every man and woman and child the dignity to make their own decision about him and about what he was saying. And this is God's way. Jesus, of course, is the exact representation of the Father, is exactly like the Father, and so is the Spirit. There's no deviation in them in any way whatsoever. They do not pervert justice. Everything, down to the last smallest detail regarding what God is and what he does, is justice. It's righteousness. It's holiness. And of course, this is what he desires from his people. And so here in this book of the covenant, in chapter 23, there is that specific idea of not perverting justice in any way. God wants his people to reflect him. He wants his people to be imitators of him. New Testament speaks of mimicking him and walking as children. And children mimic and imitate and actually provide a reflection of their parents. Not in every single one of them and not in every single way, but generally. But we are to imitate our Father. And we are to desire justice at all costs. And that would, of course, mean something that cost us personally. I must say that the human race is hardly, and me individually, I'll say as well, and I don't want to drag you into this, but I assume that it's true of you too, deceptive. We are deceptive. We are rationalistic. We are unwilling to let people see who we really are because we're afraid of what they might do when they see what we're actually like. We don't dare tell them, or we might lose them, kind of a thing. This is the falsity of the dating scene that is, ever since I've been born, and before that, the scene in American romanticism. This is the way that we deal with each other, and that we put on our best front, and most times it is a front, in order to win a mate, or get someone to like us, or even love us. And so there's a lot of psychology behind what God says here, and this going along with the crowd. You know, it strikes me that if they crucified Jesus and used these methods to get rid of him, because that's what they wanted to do, why? Various reasons, but mostly because he made them see the truth and feel guilty. They were convicted of their own sin. They were convicted of their own lies and their own cheating and so on. And so if this is what they used against him here in verse 1 and 2 against Jesus, why does the Christian or the Christian church think that it or she or he or she is going to be popular? You will not be popular if you follow even just these two verses and stay away from mass judgments that are based on no proof whatsoever, and crowd mentality, and vigilanteism, and perverting justice. Now, this can happen in order to please someone who is in power. But it can also be done in order to fulfill some twisted sense of justice that makes you partial to a poor man. That's in verse 3. I think that's all part of this whole idea. And he brings up this motivating part of it. Nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his dispute. Just because he's poor, just because he's had all these things negatively happen to him, doesn't mean that you should side with him. No, it's still about justice. Not about emotion. It's not about perceived justice. It's not about your own system of justice. It's about God's sense of justice that we are talking. And partiality in any shape or form is injustice. God does not judge people based upon externals. He bases his justice on what is just. So should we. I need to quit. Probably have gone a little bit long with this, but these are things that are irksome and problematic as we see them in other people, but are they irksome and problematic as we recognize them in ourselves? Well, until we see each other again, hopefully next Sunday. Actually, it could be tonight, but at some point, whatever. Sorry, I digress. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace.